Baby, you're the greatest. Let's do this. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic here at WGNplus.com. Thanks for clicking on or uploading or downloading or sideloading or sideswiping, whatever the heck it is you do, to listen to this show. Posted every Monday, a new episode. And yes, here we are at episode 39. 39 episodes of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And don't forget, if you go to WGNplus.com and go under the entertainment prompt, you will find all of my podcasts from 38 to number one. So if you haven't been listening too long, you can go back and listen to the evolution of this amazing podcast, this weekly hour-long podcast, and hear about all the craziness that has gone on over these last several weeks. And months, and almost a year. So go to my landing page at WGNplus.com and go under Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and you can just pick and choose. I think at this point, after 38 episodes, as we do 39 today, I am binge-worthy. Yes, I am proclaiming that I am binge-worthy. So binge away. Do what you will. One little housekeeping item before we get started with the show. I'm very excited about my guest today. And if you are a fan of radio, especially Chicago radio, you certainly will know his name, I venture to say. And if you are a fan of Artie Lang's, and especially Artie Lang, the comedian's podcast, then I think you will also be very familiar with his name. But before that, I just want to say, you know, you never know when you're going to find something that you can talk about on the radio. And I'm certainly someone that uses real life as a major topic for my shows. In the last couple weeks, I have to tell you, things have fallen right into my lap. 3 or 4 weeks ago, I spoke about the upcoming design of the disastrous design of the new Illinois license plates and how ugly they were. Jim Toronto says, cluttered and cliched. That was my review of the new 2017 Illinois license plates. And then on my way into the studio last week, I saw one of the new license plates on a car driving in to the studio. So here I was 2 or 3 weeks ago talking about these. And then as I'm driving in to come down here, the topic falls right in my lap. Today, I'm driving down the Eisenhower to come downtown, and once again, anybody who's driven on the Eisenhower here in the Chicago area knows that for some reason, at certain points, the highway is free-flowing, and then it just kind of stops. And when you get to that stop point, you look around, and there's no reason for it to have stopped. I don't mind if I see a nice, person getting a ticket. Or maybe a little fender bender, or maybe a nice car chase, or maybe a dog running alongside the shoulder. I don't mind that, but it seems like Chicago drivers, for some reason, will gape at anything that looks, they'll turn to see the shiny object, whatever it is, and we get these practically non-existent gaper blocks, these gaper delays. But I have to say, today, I saw something that was gaper-worthy. I'm driving down the Eisenhower east, and I'm flying, going nice little pace, coming down to the WGN studios to record, and here we go again. Slows up. And I'm looking ahead, and I really don't see anything, and it's like, okay, one of the usual Eisenhower slow-ups. But boy, was I in for something of a surprise. There was actually something worth looking at. And as I got closer, as the traffic going west on the Eisenhower, I look to see on the shoulder, and there is a car on fire. Now, we've been dulled a little by television shows, your Starsky and Hutches and all those action adventure kind of TV shows, and especially the movies, the action adventure movies where everything's exploding. And we always see car explosions and fires and all that stuff. And we've gotten a little dull to it. But when you see a fire in person, it is a little shocking. And when you see a car on fire, it is a little jolting, especially when you're in a car and you're realizing, well, wait a minute, can mine do the same thing that that one's doing? So there's this car on the shoulder. Its hood is up. Clearly the engine's on fire. But what made this one even cooler, I'm not some fire bug, but I had to say, I was a little intrigued. Not only was the engine burning, but some sort of flammable fluid. I'm assuming it was the gasoline from the car. But who knows? I would assume that, antifreeze and whatever other liquids are in a car, and that's how much I know about cars. It seems to me that a lot of stuff in cars, in the engine, seems to be, flammable. They're always saying, don't open up that distributor cap or whatever. Well, you don't want to open that because something could explode. Everything, don't touch that because it could explode. So I don't touch it. I call the guy. And I'm assuming that there's just a lot of the only liquid that I touch in a car is that blue stuff you put to wash the windshield wipers. That's it. Any other cap, I don't touch. I don't touch any caps in my car because they've scared the heck out of me. And if it was up to me, I'd go to self-service for my gas. I don't trust that either. But anyway, so the gas somewhere leaking or some fluid leaking underneath the engine also spilled out, and that was on fire. So it was a really cool look because you had the engine burning, but then underneath, you had this fire underneath, or as Bob Seger said, the fire down below. And that one looked even cooler. It almost looked like a fireplace if you close your eyes at the top and didn't see the engine burning. So that was kind of a neat sight. So I must say, for anybody who was on the Eisenhower recently, when this posts, it will have been 4 or 5 days. If you saw that car fire, it was pretty neat, I got to say. I'm not one for fires, and I'm not one for gaper's blocks, but if I had to have a gaper's block and a gaper delay, this fire was worth the stop. It looked very cool. I once again, I have a flip phone, so I wasn't ready to... I wasn't ready to take a picture. I should have taken a picture because I was right there. But I am so not – I don't even know where my phone was. It probably in my briefcase, which was in the back seat. I so don't carry my phone around as I should, I guess, like so many people are tethered. And I probably could have got a pretty cool picture of that. Then I could have posted it on my Facebook page. But, I'm old school. I would rather create a visual picture for you. And so I hope that I did that as the big flames in the top part of the fire with the engine. And then you had this little simmering fire underneath. It was almost like it was two separate fires for the price of one. It was quite a little view. So that was my little story today coming in. And as I said earlier, if you have been listening at all to Chicago radio over the last 20 or 30 years and you listen closely, this name should definitely pop out at you because he was a main force in the heyday of the popular Stephen Gary show here in Chicago. And later he worked right here at WGN in the sports department and was a major player. And actually, not only was he a major player, but he wound up living with a major player on the Cubs team. And we will talk about that. And in his Rolodex, I mean... this is a guy that's got $1 million Rolodex, and in some cases, based on the incomes of some of his friends, multi-million-dollar Rolodex. Let me just throw these two names at you. Bill Murray and Harry Shearer. Right now, this guy can call those numbers if he wanted to. My guest and very good friend is Mr. Dan Filato. Welcome to Elton Jim's Captain Pontastic, Mr. Dan.
Thank you, James.
Yes, and did you know Dan? As I said, Dan Filato has been a radio producer for now. How many years has it been total? Your total career?
I started in 80.
In 1980.
Yeah, 79 to 80.
Wow. So look at that. 37 years.
I could never find a real job.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I don't blame you. You've done pretty good for not having ever having a real job.
Thank you. You know what? First, I have to say.
What's that?
So this is what your voice sounds like?
What is that?
I never got to hear you before. All right, that's an inside joke.
That's a very inside joke. Although Dan, and as luck would have it, I mean, I was a huge Stephen Gary fan growing up here in Chicago, and Dan and I are around the same age. And Dan's name came up quite a bit during Stephen Gary's show. And so, like I said, if you were anybody here in Chicago listening to Stephen Gary, you certainly knew Dan Filato's name. And I was lucky enough to then work with Dan. And can you believe that it was 10 years ago this year in April when we first worked together?
It is amazing.
2007, we started at WCKG. Gary Meyer and I were at WCKG for about 8 months. At that time, it was a part of...
It took a year of begging to get you over there, but we did.
And as luck would have it, Dan was assigned to produce our show. So it was kind of a homecoming for Dan and Gary at that time. And for me, a Stephen Gary fan, and I was like a hog in slop working with both Gary and Dan and Steve Dahl at that same station. And there were times when Steve actually came in to the studio. Remember that one time when Steve came in?
Yes.
And I was in there with Steve and Gary. So I was sitting there with Steve, Gary, and Dan. And what's wrong with this picture? Elton Jim was in there too. But
I was the system program director, and you know, one of the things that people know about me and can count on me is that I am very good with difficult talent. And they said, listen, Gary is going to do a show. The first couple of weeks you had someone else producing. And they said, this Jim Toronto guy has trouble.
And I certainly prove, I will not do a show unless Mr. Filato is with me.
Exactly. So they said, can you go in there and do it? And I have to say that time was so much fun, the three of us.
That was a great show. It was, and then Randy Salerno, too.
Randy Salerno, God bless his soul.
Yeah.
We had so much fun. I really look at that as one of the best years of working in radio in my life, because so much fun. We just had so much fun.
We really did every day. And the best part, I have to say, too, is that Dan, behind the scenes of the show, was responsible for my Ron Santo
that's right.
impersonation, because Dan worked with Ron at WGN for many years. You were at WGN from what years?
88 to 2001.
Wow. So you were there for the 87, the 89 playoff run.
Yep.
And for 2003.
Yes.
Wow. So those were good times.
1998.
Oh, 90, it's right. Wow.
I have the ball that Mark Grace caught and the glove from the one-game playoff of San Francisco.
Oh, that's right.
He, much like Anthony Rizzo,
right?
Mark caught the ball, and he was, everybody was celebrating the team, and he was frantically, I was with my girlfriend at the time, we were in a box, and he knew it, we were in a box with Michael Jordan, Jim McMahon.
I told you, this is the kind of company that Dan mingles with here.
Bill Murray, and my girlfriend, and Michael Jordan's wife.
And he's being modest. His girlfriend at the time was Elle McPherson.
Yeah, no. Way hotter.
Oh, hi-yo.
So, and Mark was frantically waving me down to the field. We had a signal. We had a signal where...
Oh, in case he caught the ball?
Yes. And so he waved me down the field, and I always carried a backpack. And in the backpack, he shoved the ball in the glove. He said, I don't care who asks for this ball and glove. I deserve it. It's mine.
Wow.
I've been here too long. I don't care if Major League Baseball asks for it. I don't care if the Cubs ask for it. I don't care if God asks for it. You do not give up the ball and glove.
Wow.
And then, after they lost, he thought for sure they would beat Atlanta. And
right.
A second-string catcher hits a home run in the eighth or ninth inning. Dave Kaplan and I left the broadcast booth in Atlanta thinking the Cubs had won. We go down, and this guy hits a home run, and then the series turns around.
Yeah, that's right.
And then Mark said, when we got back to Chicago, I said, here's the ball and glove. He goes, hey, keep it. I don't care about it anymore.
Wow. So. And as I said in my introduction before the show started, or we got to Dan here as we just started, Dan, that Mark Gray story is one of about 1,000 that Dan has because through your work here at WGN. Now, so what were you? You were sports producer, direct, what were you here?
Programming production supervisor.
Wow, that's quite a title.
Yeah, they gave me a they wanted Northwestern and football and basketball, and they had me as the sports director, but to get Northwestern, they said, Dave Ennett has to come over. He wants to be sports director. Do you mind if we promote you? I go, no, I don't care. I love Dave Ennett.
Right.
So, yes. You know, so and actually, there's a funny story with that. When my review came up like a year later, Dave said, hey, we have to sit down for a review. I said, I already did it. And he's like, what are you talking about? He goes, you have to do it with me. I go, well, you're not my boss. He goes, yeah, I am. I go, no, you're not. And he went into the general manager. He goes, no, we already did Dan's. No, he's not. But Dave and I were, that's how, like, fun it was in that sports department. Dave Kaplan, myself, Tom Waddle, and Dave Ennett. And, you know, the three of us, Kaplan, Waddle, and I, did so many, and Mike Farron and Mark Silverman. And we did so many things that so irritated Dave Ennett, who's so, you know, so preppy and honest and could never lie and just a good guy.
And now a Walk of Famer here at WGN.
Yes.
Well, so Dan, through his work producing the sports telecasts here at WGN Radio, obviously the Cubs were a major part of that. And so Dan got to know Mark Grace and ultimately became Mark Grace's roommate.
Right.
Pretty much during Mark Grace's heyday here in Chicago, right?
90 to 2000.
Yeah.
2000 until he went to the Diamondbacks.
Yeah. So, you know, I they're not all for publication, but just let me say that Dan's told me a few stories. And that the Mark Grace, whatever life you were imagining that Mark Grace was living during his time here in Chicago as a sex symbol and great first baseman for the Cubs, whatever you think that lifestyle would be, it's 10 times better.
Yeah, it's
based on,
you can't even imagine,
the first-hand stories that Dan has told me. But you know, we worked together, and as I said, so Dan also worked with Ron Santo.
Yep.
Obviously. And so one day when we were at WCKG, the Cubs, there was a rumor that the Cubs were up for sale initially in 2007. And because Sam Zell, I think, had just bought the team, had just bought the company. And we were talking about it, and it was during a break, so this was not on the air. And I had listened to Ron, like every Cub fan, and so just in my own head, I always kind of did my own little Ron impersonation. And I know it wasn't perfect in his voice, but it tried to capture the essence of his voice as well as his, you know, his kind of stutterings and his mumblings and getting the names wrong and stuff. And so I just happened to do this during a break. It was not on the air. And Dan goes, whoa, what the heck was that? And I'm like, well, that's my Ron Santo. And he goes, wait a minute, we got to do something with that. And so then Gary was doing, if you remember this, and Gary did a Pat Hughes.
Yes.
And so we did Pat and Ron.
Yeah.
And we pretended that Sam Zell sold the team to a Middle Eastern, some Middle Eastern, prince or something. And so we were doing a Pat and Ron, and that's where the Ron Santo voice then became a part of that show. And of course, that year, the Cubs had a good season.
Yep.
And so we were able to play that, and we had fun with that, And then when Gary and I came to WGN, we were able to do that for a couple of years. And the highlight of that was when I actually did my Ron Santo for Ron on the air. And Ron said, if you call my wife, I don't even know if she'd know the difference. And so from when we got the blessing from Ronnie to do it, then we certainly did it here for a couple of years, and it was fun, and we certainly miss. And, of course, if you remember, we even did that little drive to get to get Ron bronzed and get his own statue. Yeah. And finally, after he passed away, when he couldn't enjoy it, they gave him one.
Yeah.
Which was unfortunate, but yeah. So, so many people have passed through the life of Dan Filato. Yeah. It's quite. Have you ever thought about? As I said before, Harry Shearer. You met Harry through your production work with Stephen Gary because he filled in for Stephen Gary every so often. So you met Harry. Ultimately, Harry Shearer became your best man at your wedding.
Right, and mine at his.
Oh, so you're his best man too.
Yep.
To his wife Judith. So how crazy is that? So you are still very good friends with Harry.
Yes.
And then, this is the one. There are a few people you may hear the stories of how difficult it is to contact Bill Murray. He doesn't answer his phone. He doesn't even used to when there was a fax. Now it sounds like he might be getting a little more.
He's got a BlackBerry now.
Yeah, so I think he's getting a little more savvy. But there was a while there where he was pretty much a recluse, and he didn't have an agent, and it was a very hard thing to get in touch with him and hard to even get him to be interested or even to read a script. But during that very difficult time, of the few people that had Bill Murray's line, direct line, you were among them.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to have it. It was amazing, and
Now, how did you meet Bill, and how did you become such good friends with him?
You know, I met him when I was a kid. I had an apartment near Second City, and I got to meet, that whole crew, that Belushi, Aykroyd.
Oh, wow,
Bill
really?
Murray. Yeah, Bill Murray, because my parents had moved out to the suburbs, and I wanted to stay in the city and finish school. And so my dad was pretty cool with it, and so I got to meet, and, Stephen Gary during those heydays, I got to meet John and Danny and Bill.
Because they used to come on the show. Belushi used to come on their show.
Right. John and Danny because of the Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
So they would sometimes crash in my apartment. Now, here's a funny story. Artie Lang, that I work with now, he and Harry had done a couple of things, and Artie had done a couple of favors for Harry last year. Harry sets up a dinner about 8 months ago in Los Angeles because we're out there. Artie's doing Conan. There's a machine that breaks down in Conan, so Artie's got to stay for like an hour extra. So I get to the restaurant we're supposed to meet Harry Shearer. I get out of the cab, and Harry goes, "Where's Artie?" I go, "Why?" He goes, "Oh, no, don't tell me he's not coming." I go, "He's at Conan. He's stuck at Conan." I go, "What's wrong?" And he goes, "Come here." I open the door of this restaurant. There's Dan Aykroyd, his lovely wife, Don Rickles, and Peter LaSalle.
Oh, my God. And Peter LaSalle was the former producer of the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson for years.
Right, and Don Rickles was in Dirty Work with him.
Right.
And he gave him the nickname Baby Gorilla.
You Baby Gorilla.
And it was, and Harry's just like laughing so hard. And I'm sitting across from Dan, and after about 20 minutes, he looks at me, and he's like, "I know you. You had that. You're John's friend. You had that apartment across the street from Second City." And I go, "Yep, that was me."
Oh, how funny. Jeez. Yeah.
I was waiting to see, and Harry was laughing because he knew.
Did Artie show up?
No.
Oh, he never showed up?
No, he couldn't.
Jeez. Well, that was the thing. So the main reason I've had Dan on the line, not only to just kind of, pick his brains about some of these crazy, pop culture and show business moments that he's had in a very storied and impressive career as a radio and TV producer. But the main reason I wanted to talk to you, and we will get into it a little more, you mentioned Artie Lang. If anybody obviously knows, listening to the from the Howard Stern Show, both on regular radio and then later on Sirius satellite radio, Artie was a major part of the Howard Stern Show for what, 7 or 8 years? And
8 and a half. I'm closer to 9, I think.
Yeah, right? Almost 9. And and Artie, for the last several years, has been doing his own radio show and now a podcast. And through the crazy serendipitous road that your career has followed somehow. The fates have shined on you. And he hooked up with Artie and has been producing for Artie now several years. And now, this month in February, starting on February 19th, Artie Lang is going to be a major part of a new program that is on HBO. And here's another pedigree name that happens to be directed by and what, co-created by?
Yes.
By none other than probably the most popular and one of the most respected comedy minds of today, Judd Apatow, who is behind 40-Year-Old Virgin and so many of the Seth Rogen things and early the Larry Sanders Show. So once again,
Freaks and Geeks, which is one of my favorites.
Oh yeah, Freaks and Geeks, I love that. So once again, Dan finds himself in an amazing opportunity, surrounded by some of the best and creative people in the business today. So on February 19th, the show Crashing will premiere on HBO. What time is that going to be on?
I don't know, probably
8 or 9, I would assume.
Yeah, 8 Central, probably. Yeah.
And it's a half-hour show, and though Artie is not the quote-unquote star of the show, he plays certainly a very important supporting role and is really, from what you were saying, a major player in the whole action of the show, right?
Well, episode 1 is called Artie Lang.
Oh, really?
Yes.
The premiere episode?
Yes.
So here's the thing, and we'll talk about the show and the premise, and Dan can certainly give us a firsthand view of it because he's been involved. But here's the best part. So Dan has been telling me for months about this show, and it's going to start production and da-da-da. So finally, after months, as it usually takes, HBO creates a minute and a half trailer that they put out on the internet. So one day, as I told you, I only have a flip phone, which means my screen is very small on my flip phone.
Yeah.
So when you send me pictures, they're not the easiest thing to see. So Dan sends me a picture of what looks like a radio studio. And it says, and underneath the caption, he sends me this photo and says, they auditioned 500 people to play me. So, and then he said, hey, there's this trailer. This is from the trailer. So I see the first picture. Now, let me set the stage for you. If anybody knows Dan, he said earlier in his thing that one of your main things is you have a backpack, and you've had a backpack before they were even cool.
Right.
So Dan always has a backpack. He's very tech savvy. He's always got headphones on. He's always got something in his ears. He's always connected to something.
Well, that's to avoid talking to you, Jim.
Well, of course. So he's always tethered. And he's always got a baseball cap on, and he's always got a coat. He's always, that's the Dan Filato look. So so in this picture, I see Artie Lang, and then next to Artie, it's a small picture. And Dan wears glasses, too. It's a small picture. I see this person sitting next to Artie at the console in the radio thing.
This beautiful woman.
And well, I don't know that. I see somebody with a baseball cap pushed way down along their almost right up to their eyes with glasses and a hooded sweatshirt and their hands up like they're talking. And so with this caption that says they auditioned 500 people to play me. And so then I see this and I go, wow, is that weird? Why did they wind up casting a woman to play Dan? Why wouldn't they just have a guy? I mean, I know that, it's hard to find somebody to grab the essence of a Dan Filato, but I think you could have found a male. So why did they get a woman? So I'm sitting there going,
wasn't available.
Yeah, so I wrote back something to that effect, like, couldn't they find a guy? And then Dan came back with a text like question mark, question mark, question mark. So then I go online and I look at this thing, and I didn't have the volume up. I was just once again looking at the pictures. And so sure enough, a lot of quick cuts, and there's that picture. that Dan sent me this screenshot of Artie talking to this person with glasses and a cap and a hoodie on, who I assume is the Dan character. So then Dan says to me, did you see me in the trailer? And I say, no, I saw the woman that they cast as you. And he said, that's not, you know, that's not me. Because he goes, I go, well, where are you? And he says, well, I'm in the foreground. You know, I've got headphones on. And I'm sort of behind, you know, a microphone and by a mixer or something. Well, I saw that, but I was mainly looking at the person sitting next to him. It turns out that the person next to him was Sarah Silverman. So I thought that you then said that it was you. And I'm like, Dan, you know, Dan doesn't look like Sarah. Where's Sarah Silverman? I mean, for 10 minutes, I was laughing. I could not believe. I'm like, geez, why did they cast a woman? So this thing, I mean, this cut comes very quick. So you are in the show, but it's just the back of your head.
Well, we don't know that. Just in that clip.
I understand that.
I actually don't know. In fact, they told me, they said, listen, if we do use a lot of your lines, because I laughed a lot. I mean,
right.
Sitting there with Artie Lang.
Right. And Sarah
Silverman and
right.
Pete Holmes. You know,
yeah.
Being directed by Judd Apatow. Are you kidding me?
Right, yeah.
So I was laughing.
Well, because I assumed that,
right.
You know, because a lot of times on the Artie Lang podcast, Dan is the producer. He's right there. And you do talk to Artie.
Right.
You know, you're kind of like almost like a co-host at times. So I'm like, okay, well, they're recreating for the show. They're recreating, you know, the Artie's podcast. But geez, that's too bad that they cast a woman in Dan's role, and she is dressed just like you. So now Dan gives me a hard time. Well, how could you think that was me? You know, you saw that I was, you know, I was sitting in the foreground there, but how could you think that Sarah was me? And I go, as I said, she had a hat, she had glasses, and she had a hoodie. And I said, I just saw Dan in December. We went, my wife and I went to New York, and we met up with Dan for a day. Then I said to him, okay, Dan, when I saw you in New York, what were you wearing? You had a cap, you had your glasses, you had headphones, and you had a hoodie. So why am I crazy? Now, I feel sorry for Sarah Silverman.
I can't wait to tell her.
Because I don't think she looks a lot like you. But once again, it was a fast MTV-like cut.
It depends if you look from the right or the left.
Yeah, yeah. She does have a bad. She does have a falado side.
Wow. Wow.
But man, so anyway, so now tell the premise of this new show called Crashing on HBO.
Well, it's Pete Holmes, who spent some time in Chicago in mid-90s. I remember him.
Oh, you do remember him?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I had to do, you know, they would always ask Mark Grace to those, you know, to the Improv Olympic and Sharna Halperin and then Second City, you know, because Mark lived in Chicago 365 days a year.
Right.
With the exception of spring training. Well, so you could easily pick out the really, really funny people. Tina Fey was a waitress at Carlucci's where my chef friend was the chef. So same.
Really?
With, yeah. In fact, when we had gone out a couple of times to hang out and have dinner and talk about, you know, with Artie, she's looking at me once again exactly like Danny Aykroyd.
Right.
Where do I know you from? I go, I don't know. I go, but it seems to me it's Carlucci's restaurant in Halstead. She goes, yeah, I was a waitress there. I go, well, I used to come in there. She goes, wait a minute, you came in with Mark Grace all the time.
Oh, how funny.
And I said, yes. And
yeah, Dan is always the wingman.
Yeah. So, or the people, or the person that bails the person out of jail.
Well, I was just being kind.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, Pete Holmes is the actual co-creator and the star of this. And,
right.
And in fact, just real quick, did you see there was a little small interview with him in one of the recent New Yorkers?
Yes.
About did, the yeah. show, yeah.
Yeah. And he had something kind of, you know, not so good happened between him and his wife. and he wrote a script about it and sent it. He kept on sending it to Judd, and Judd said he would do it, and Artie was in there for a small part, and all of a sudden they saw the chemistry between the two of them, and it clicked, and the HBO executive said, we got to have, you know, Artie in this too, and that's pretty much what happened. And he went from, you know, a quick audition, which he almost didn't go on because we were just so busy at the time, to, you know, now this has turned out to be one of the greatest moves in his career, you know, working with Judd and Pete and HBO and everyone who has seen it, all his friends and peers have said he's amazing in it. So now
explain the premise. So what's the connection of the term crashing?
Crashing is a term that comedians use, and I know the term very well my entire life, of crashing on other people's couches. when you have no place to stay, you're in the town for 1 or 2 days, you're in, or you've broken up with a girl, or you have no place to stay, that's the term. And Artie always lets his friends and comedian friends stay here. In Chicago, would have people, you know, crash at my house all the time. When I lived with Mark Grace, you know, we would go out and we would be at a function and, you know, some celebrity, oh, I'm too drunk to drive, or I'm too, you know, just we'll crash at our place. We used to have people crash all the time. And so that's where the term came up. And it's all around Pete crashing on other people's couches.
So that's where. So he's a comedian. He's with other comedians too, right?
Right.
And they're all kind of working together and struggling. So the whole idea is that he's crashing on other people's couches while he's trying to do his different shows and stuff. When Artie was you know cast on this, what they just had him for one? Was this just supposed to be like one scene of
cameo
of just him being of the main character Pete Holmes just being on Artie's podcast?
Yes, it would be a cameo.
But it was going to just be of the podcast, right?
Yeah, and Judd, who is a big fan of our podcast, as was Pete, said, well, maybe we should involve Artie's podcast.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, that's how I got involved.
So now how many episodes are there initially here?
Artie's in 5 of the 8, I think.
8.
Yeah.
Okay. And so this is a one camera kind of film thing. There's no.
No, it's a 4 camera.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
In fact, the clip that everyone is seeing now, where Artie makes this amazing face when Pete tells him he wants to be a comedian, Artie didn't even know that Judd had caught that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he's like, well, but it's, you know, Judd's big time, baby. I mean, he is.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, I mean, this is. I mean,
and you know,
he's the king of comedy. Yeah,
exactly. Right now, he's the highest director in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And to have people, to have someone like that listen to your podcast and tell you how good you are, and then to have them invite you to be on this show, and he just trusts comedians and he trusts people, and Artie and Pete delivered.
So now so in the once again the weird world of radio entertainment. So you were at WGN for how many years?
88 to 2001.
Wow, okay. So 13, 14 years.
Right.
You were with Stephen Gary from 1980 till how long?
80 to 86.
86. So then you were at WCKG for a while. I'm sure you had other.
And I stayed at WLS for a year and worked with Fred Winston because WLS had begged me to stay when Stephen Gary went to the Loop.
Oh,
and I
right.
went to the Loop with them for the first 3 weeks, and I just thought, you know, this is not something that I want to do. It was the inmates running the asylum.
Right.
And, you know, it's not that I'm, you know, very corporate. It's just I knew that there were the magic that we had at WLS on that, you know, on the AM station could not be duplicated the way that they had it set up. And WGN and WLS had asked me to stay and work with Fred Winston. And I always, you know, I grew up listening to Fred.
Yeah, everybody did.
It you know, for me, this has been such a treat because I get to work with some of my heroes and number one on that list, you know, close to number one and number two is Harry Carey and Ron Santo.
Right.
every day I'd come home and watch Ron Santo at the Hot Corner. He was my guy. He was,
right.
Couldn't even talk to me. Brooks Robinson, forget it.
Well, that's so nice of you to say, Dan, because it's true.
Right. And even, living with Mark, I got to spend an amazing amount of time with players, and Brooks Robinson says Ronnie was as good as me and better than anyone else, and
he was certainly a better hitter than Brooks Robinson was.
Yes. And just he loves Ronnie, and Mike Schmidt and all the third basemen I run into, they all praise Ronnie as one of the best there ever was.
So
and
how did you hook up? But
and then you got to remember he had type 1 diabetes.
Oh, no kidding.
And it's amazing to know when you have, family members that have type 2 or that isn't even close to type 1 and they can't, even function. And that's why for a long time.
And he couldn't even tell people he had it.
Right, right. And that's why for a long time I gave Jay Cutler a pass because, I knew that his mood was tied in with that, but now
there comes a point. Well, I remember Ron Santo telling the story that he at the time he didn't want to tell the public. I mean, first at that time back in the 60s and 70s, diabetes wasn't even all that well known. He certainly didn't want to, being an athlete, you certainly don't want to show or reveal any of your possible weaknesses in any kind.
Right.
And so he didn't want to publicize that he had diabetes and certainly didn't want to, as proud of a guy as he was, he didn't want to, make it look like he was doing something, some heroic thing. So he just kind of downplayed it. I'm sure the people in the, on the team knew. And he tells that story that one time where he was up to bat and he was on the on-deck circle and all of a sudden the diabetes was hitting him.
Yeah.
And he was starting to see double and triple.
Right.
And so now he's up to bat. And what is he going to do? There's a man on base, and he said, I saw three pitchers, and I just swung at the middle ball. And he hit a home run.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go on and on. But, like I said, so now how do you get to work with Artie, though?
I moved back to Chicago, and Premier kept on calling me and said, we're going to start a new show in a couple of months. And Harry Shearer was doing the Nixon series for YouTube. It was originally for the BBC, and he wanted me to, oversee it. And the same people, Premier, called and said, we're starting up this new show with these two comedians, and they only told me one of the comedians. And I thought, this one comedian is going to hate me because he's very right-wing, and I just knew that we would not get along. And I kept on saying no, I kept on saying no, and then Drew Hayes and Trevor Oliver both begged me, just go to New York, take the free trip. It was my birthday. He said, just do this for me, and I did it for Drew and Trevor, and I went to New York, and they finally told me, right before I got on the plane, that the second comedian was Artie Lang, and I'm like, okay, I'll go to New York and meet Artie Lang, and went to New York.
So how many years has that been now?
That was 2010.
Wow. So that's been 7 years, and there was a radio show, then there was a DirecTV TV show, and now you are Artie's producer for
the podcast.
And now, so is Artie, I mean, so now this show is obviously done, shooting and everything, the show Crashing, which will be on HBO, premiering on February 19th. And that's a Sunday, right?
I think
it's a Sunday. So that's one of the key times for viewing now. So
right.
When HBO puts a show on Sundays, in fact, I don't know if it's either before or after your show, but then there's that show with Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman, I think called Some Big Lies.
Yeah, I'm in that too.
Which is what the back of your head in that too?
Yeah.
But I mean, so you're going to be surrounded. I mean, that's certainly that show. That's on the Sunday lineup.
Right.
That's going to be. They've obviously got some big hopes for that show.
Yeah.
They haven't said anything about possibly renewing it or anything, have they? yet? They want to still wait to see how.
Nothing's official yet.
Yeah, but they still want to see how it performs. But
yes,
my gosh, with a pedigree of Judd Apatow, and certainly you know, Artie brings. I mean, you know, Artie, you know, known from the you know, from the Howard Stern show, but you know, was on Mad TV, was on the Norm right. show. And then, obviously, is still continues to do a pretty pretty regular stand-up stuff, doesn't he?
Yes. He does mostly theaters and casinos and does very well at that. And you know, it's so funny because I totally forgot this. I would – why so many young kids would want to take pictures with him, and so many kids – you know, 20, 21, 22 go crazy when they see him. And I completely forgot he was the Santa in Elf.
Right.
And gets into the fight with Will Ferrell.
Definitely,
and that's
yeah.
what it is.
Also, a lot of kids know him from that, huh?
Right. They run Elf, you know.
Oh, yeah, Elf at Christmas time, definitely.
Yeah. And
that's such a funny, you know, kind of slapstick scene. So yes. everybody remembers that. Yeah, my God. And that was just a one-shot deal, too, right? I mean, you know. He probably
right.
didn't even think much of that when he probably did it.
Yeah, he just knew it was going to be funny because
right.
he and Will had been in a couple of movies together, and
yeah.
John Favreau had wanted him in it, so it worked out really, yeah. really well.
Well, the thing about Artie, too, like I said, I've been a Howard Stern fan forever, as long as whenever he first came into the Chicago market in the mid to early 90s, and have followed him you know, with Satellite as well, so I certainly was well aware. In fact, I remember listening. The day when Artie first met Howard, he came in with Norm Macdonald.
Yes.
And initially, Norm was just the guest. And I remember Norm saying, well, I got my friend over here.
Yeah.
Artie Norm. Lang, you ought to meet him. And
yeah. There was something Norm didn't want to talk about that he knew Howard was about to get to. And he said, by the way, here's my friend Artie.
Yeah, and so Artie came in, and you could tell that that Howard just thought he was funny. And then Artie started telling him these crazy stories about when he was on cocaine during Mad TV and had a pig nose on and all that stuff. And then that really kicked it in. And when when there was an opening on Howard's show, Artie
was. Can you say cocaine in WGN?
Well, we're not on WGN. We're on the internet, my friend.
All right.
You can say anything.
And all right, just want to make sure.
Yeah. So things have changed since you were here, Dan.
You can't do it.
Yeah. But, and then all of a sudden Artie became a main fixture of the show for many years. I have never met Artie. Dan has threatened with introducing.
Well, you're very aloof when you come to New York. You know,
very aloof.
Like,
yeah.
Well, you know.
Oh yeah.
I can fit you in between.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm usually there with my wife. What am I supposed to say? I mean, what am I supposed to say? I'm just going to go hang out with Dan. Why don't you just go walk in Central Park for five hours?
I'm going to see the six hour version of Hamilton.
I'm going to see Nicholas Nickleby for 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
But but I believe, and if I ever do get a chance to meet Artie, I do believe that we will become fast friends.
Right.
Because Artie and I share an affinity for several things. We are huge Bruce Springsteen fans.
Yes.
We are huge Honeymooner fans.
Yes.
We are huge Woody Allen fans.
Yes.
We are huge sports fans.
Yes.
I mean, I know you're friends with them, but I got news for you. You probably don't want me to meet Artie because you will be aced out.
Yeah, okay.
Because Artie and I will just be throwing Honeymooner lines back and forth to one another,
mm-hmm.
and you won't even know what's going on.
That's what keeps me up at night, Jay.
So now when they were filming the show, were you on the set all the time?
Pretty much,
crashing show?
Yes.
Yeah? But you were just there when Artie was there. You weren't there for the other episodes, right?
No, some of them I was with other people that I know, and I went to a lot of it. But then we did tour a lot, too. We was doing a couple of talk shows at the time, so... They did it very quickly and very in a compact way, and a lot of it overlapped. So
yeah. So can you just get a sense, even though it hasn't premiered yet? I mean, are there some really big laughs in this show, or is it kind of like
it'll be the greatest comedy you've ever seen in your entire life?
I'm just wondering, is it more like a Louis C.K. show, which is very subtle in its humor, or is it a little broader? You know, I'm just wondering for people that might want to tune in. I'm just trying to give them a sense of what the you know, kind of the perspective of the show is.
It's funny people saying funny things, and Judge just lets them say whatever they want.
So it wasn't very scripted?
No.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a script, and then Judd would say, "Now take it off on your own, and you know, do whatever you want to do, and take two, take three, take four, take five." It was amazing to watch.
So did
to watch Judd, Pete, and Artie. It was awesome.
How quick into the production did they decide that Artie would play a major role as opposed to just a cameo?
I think in the read-through, I think that that's when they...
Oh, I see. So it wasn't like when they started filming, they said, oh, wait a minute. They knew ahead of time.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah, and so Artie is basically playing, and Artie is playing Artie.
Yes.
Artie Lang.
He just did a Vanity Fair interview yesterday of what it's like for celebrities to play themselves in a comedy sitcom.
Wow. So he plays Artie Lang, who has a podcast.
Yes.
And is a comedian.
Yes.
And I mean, he's not even playing a comedian like Artie Lang. He is playing Artie Lang.
Yes.
How funny.
Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic.
So he said to really find the character then, I assume.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I tell you, Dan, it's an amazing, like I said, you've got some crazy stories that, you know, if you don't have a book in you, then I don't know who does, in terms of some of the people you've met and the situations that you've been in. As I said,
when you got arrested in that dress, Jim.
Well, Dan is like Ray Donovan. Dan is the fixer. When you do something, you make sure that you call Dan, and Dan gets it cleaned up. He's got a good crew. Yeah. They get rid of all fingerprints, all pictures, all blood stains.
Right.
You name it. It's as if it never happened. but yeah, I mean, I'm a wolf. Do you sometimes even? I mean, seriously, do you sometimes just like look back at the last 35, 40 years and just go, what the hell is this, and how did this even happen?
Oh, all the time.
Because they're clearly, just by some of the stories that you tell, as I said before, it's kind of serendipitous in that it's just like this guy happened to know you from here, or you just happened to be at this spot. I mean, there is no way that there was any plan here.
Yeah, I do think about it and how lucky I've been.
Like, how did you get your job? Now, how old were you when you first started with Stephen Gary?
I was... I like around 17.
17.
Yeah.
So you weren't even out of high. Were you out of high school?
No.
So how did you even get that job?
Well, I was okay. There was a small station in WXLC in the northern suburbs of Chicago, and they played Springsteen songs other than Born to Run.
Mm-hmm.
And I was 15. And I would, we lived in the northwest side of Chicago, and I would listen. My whole life was, I loved listening to the radio. And so this station played really good music, and it wasn't top 40. And I wrote the guy a letter. I said, hey, listen, the guys that you have on the music that you play on your station is great, but your disc jockeys stink. And he wrote me back, like, the meanest letter. He said, well, if you think you're so funny, write jokes. So I took out the paper one day, and I wrote a couple of jokes, and I sent it to him. And about 3 months later, he called the house, and my parents both worked. And I answered the phone, and he said, is Dan there? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, this is so-and-so from WXLC. He said, would you listen? The overnight guy quit. Do you want the job? And I said, okay. And I started doing that. And I also went to high school. I was going to Taft High School. And I also produced plays that Taft, the guy that ran the Taft chorus department, did plays that combined all the Chicago high schools. It was called the Chicago and High School Theatrical Troupe. And he needed help. And he knew that I was really good with that. So he said, listen, can you help me with this? And in one of those plays was a guy that worked with Stephen Gary. and I knew where they were, and obviously it was before Disco Demolition, and I said we had kind of become friends, and then he started working for Stephen Gary, and then when I had met Gary a couple of times, I had a friend that was like a Beatle fanatic, and Gary was a Beatle fanatic, and I had a friend, and this friend would go down there, and he said, would you like to come down, and two or three times I went down with him, and Gary was great, we had so much fun, and then he threw my name out there when the person died, and they were looking for a producer, and I thought, okay, I worked from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. at a Checker gas station. Then I went to high school. Then I went, you know, and I was doing overnights, and I thought I could either go from Chicago to Kenosha to Madison to, or I could go right to Chicago. And I thought, I'm going to go right to Chicago.
Right. Because sometimes you don't get out of Kenosha.
Right, exactly. So,
yeah, but I mean, so even that.
Yeah.
Is ridiculous.
Yeah, and I was, you know.
I mean, you wrote this letter.
Yeah.
And not only did you write this letter, but you know, this guy sends this letter back to you angry.
Right.
And that's the guy who hires you.
Right.
I mean, that's ridiculous. That's,
yeah.
That's,
and then,
you know, and that start, and then look at all the different dominoes.
Right. And the part
that knocked down.
The fact that the apartment that I kind of shared was so close to Second City, I didn't even think about it at the time. And then all of a sudden, John and Danny had that illegal blues bar,
right?
Now by Zany's there, and that's where everybody hung. So I would work with Stephen Gary. We'd go to that blues bar, and the melding of all that those people was just amazing. And I was epicenter at 18. I couldn't drink, you know. I would have John Belushi buy me beer. So it was.
Yeah, like I said. If you,
Del Close was in the same building. So
right.
The
great Second City improv guy.
Right. The inventor of improv was there, and he would always say to me, you should take a Second City class because I hear you on Stephen Gary and you have really good timing. And I just thought, I don't want to do that. I get very nervous in front of crowds. And I just didn't want to do that. And I got Joe Walsh once, like right around that time, brought me up in front of 70,000 people at a concert, and I just froze. And I just couldn't. I was like, you know what? I can't go on stage.
Have you ever thought about writing a book? Or are you just that so many of these stories are kind of personal things?
Yeah,
that
they're personal, and
of these people would not want
right
to be made public.
Yeah, just the Jim Toronto stories.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
jeez.
You know.
No, but I mean,
you want to talk? You know, they want to talk about a Marlon Brando biography, a Jim Toronto biography.
Oh yeah. But you know? No, I mean, my gosh, I mean, just think of the people, you know, that you have met and you've come to know and work with. It really is an amazing.
Oh, it's a dream. It's been a dream job, yeah. And they're the funniest people on the planet, you know. And I've been lucky enough to, the producers that started out with me, some of them are working at, you know, optical centers.
Right.
You know, yeah. Or.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, the way that this is just kind of compounded.
Right.
Is crazy. And like I said, even from my standpoint, having grown up and been a Stephen Gary fan from when I was 14 or 15, you know, it was a big thrill to ultimately, you know, work with Gary, because I've always said it was kind of like,
right.
You know, Babe Ruth asking you to, you know, to play catch in Yankee Stadium.
Right.
But it was, and I'm not saying this just because you're on it. I'm just not trying to blow smoke up your dress. But when we went to CKG, and then it was like, and Dan Filato is going to be your producer.
Right.
I'm like, how crazy is that? I mean, I felt like you for a minute. I mean, you've had 40 years of that. I had, you know, 5 minutes of it. But it was like, how crazy is this that I grew up listening to Gary and Steve and wanted to get into radio because of that. But I also remember Dan being a major part of that show. And now I'm working with him.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of crazy. And like I said, now, you know, 10 years later, we've known each other and we've socialized. And, you know, every time I go to New York and when you lived here in Chicago, more full time, we would always hang out. And I was just sitting there going, you know, how crazy is this from my standpoint? So I'm looking at it from my standpoint and saying, while it's weird the way, you know, roads cross, but you've had, I mean, you know, your roads are unbelievable, the paths that you have crossed.
Right. In 2009, I was on the White House lawn arguing with President Obama over who had the better fans, the Cubs or the White Sox. We got into a huge argument, you know, who cared about Iraq and Afghanistan?
Right,
and
right.
We just got into a huge argument.
Yeah, that's.
And he loved, you know, I have been told that at the Cubs celebration at the White House that he mentioned Mark Grace because, number one, Michelle Obama was a Mark Grace fan, but it was he knew that Mark. You know, that Mark and I were, you know, roommates
right,
for a long
right,
time. And
right.
He would ask me, you know, stories. I mean, that was many of the things that people ask me are the Mark stories.
Oh, yeah. No, those, I mean, that's, I mean, like I said before,
right.
To be living with a major league baseball player is one cool
thing. Yeah.
But Mark Grace at that time was the king of Chicago.
Right. And I was moving, WGN had said to me, listen, I lived kind of in Norwood Park, and they said I had an apartment there, and they said, listen, we need you to, in case of rain delays, and you, God knows, you know about those.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You need to be. Can you be closer to downtown? And I was, and that, I had met Mark a couple of times, and so his wife and my girlfriend at the time had become friends, and we'd gone out a couple of times. And to be honest with you, I was sick of athletes, and I really didn't enjoy going out with Mark that much because I had had my fill with the 85 Bears and just...
Oh, because you were here, but you weren't at WGN for the 85
but
Bears.
No, Stephen Gary, we were...
Oh, you were buddies with them,
we were the show.
And, oh, right, yeah.
You know, and they were just... You know, now most of them are my friends, but man, back then they were just such jerks. And
So that's how you got to live with Mark Grace then,
right? Mark, I was moving closer, and then Mark's wife and him split, and he kept on locking himself out of the house, and he gave me an extra key, and he said, "Hey, so after like about 6 months and like 50 times going,"
that's
and he said to me, "Would you want to?" be roommates?" And I'm like, no, you know, I like,
no.
I like living alone. And I've always kind of liked it. And because, you know, my parents had moved out to the burbs, and it was kind of a weird story of why they had moved out to the suburbs, because somebody had offered them like an amazing amount of money for their house out of the blue. So I was alone for a long time, and I kind of liked it, and was dating a girl and was thinking about asking her to marry me,
and then Mark Grace came by.
Yeah, and then he said, a couple of times we got together, and he's like, let's just try it. Let's get a place for a year, and we'll try it.
And how long did you live with him?
12 years.
Oh, my God. I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, it was 80. It was
basically
90 to 2001,
wow.
And then he went to the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
He thought he was re-signing with the Cubs. He went with the Diamondbacks. Then that year, here's a great story for you. So one day, I come home from WGN, and there's a bunch of luggage in the living room, and it's Cubs luggage. And I knew Mark was in Arizona at the time, and I'm like, whose luggage is this? So I didn't open it or whatever, and all of a sudden, I go up to the third floor. I hear somebody walking up the third floor. I walk up to the third floor, and it's Kerry Wood. I go, Woody. I call Woody. I go, Woody, what are you doing here? He's like, Mark didn't tell you? I go, no. He goes, he said you were lonely, so I was looking for a place to live. And he goes, do you mind if I live with you? I'm like, no. And that's how. And Woody lived with me for a year.
Oh, geez.
And then Woody, I kind of introduced him to his wife, Sarah. He was really shy, and she worked at a restaurant that we would go to. And then he moved out. He moved out with Sarah when he and Sarah got engaged.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Well, like I said, Dan Filato. I mean, you can go on and on with some of these crazy stories. But the key thing is to let everybody know that on February 19th, Dan, at least the back of his head, as far as we know, along with Artie Lang, will be appearing in a new show on HBO called Crashing. starring Pete Holmes, and it will be on HBO on Sunday nights, probably around 8 o'clock. I'm not sure exactly what time, but it's certainly going to be directed by Judd Apatow. There's no way that this can't be funny.
I know.
And so who knows? It could be the beginning of another crazy, 10-year experience for you.
You never know.
Yeah.
It's been an amazing ride in this business and working with some of my absolute heroes.
Yeah,
and
well.
Now, when I listen to, I have to say that, I know that Howard Stern took a lot of stuff from Stephen Gary. Some of the stuff I created. And I just would listen to Howard once every, two or three weeks until Artie came. And then I would listen, every day because I thought he was so funny and open. And it was exactly like he did radio the way I wanted to listen to it. He did radio like Stephen Gary did from 80 until 87, So it was the kind of radio I wanted to listen to. And,
yeah. And
now I get to work with him all the time.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Mr. Dan Filato, Chicago's very own, and always have fun hooking up with Dan, whether he comes back home or in New York. In fact, we even did the Carnegie Deli together a couple of times.
Yes, we did.
So anyway, Dan, thanks so much. We will be definitely tuning in to Crashing on HBO starting on February 19th, and Judd Apatow directing. And Artie Lang and Pete Holmes starring. So we're looking forward to that. And don't forget, you will see Dan Filato, the back of his head.
Go Cubs.
Go Cubs. Take it easy, Dan.
Thanks, buddy.
Take it easy.
Bye.
And that and episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Want to thank Dan Filato for calling in. Hope you had a good time today. I certainly did. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. Every Monday, a new episode. So please click on the WGN Plus every Monday, where you will find Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic from the end of the web to your screens.